Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine.
So we're live. Welcome to Dracena Wines on Wine. And in today's video, live stream event, I am very honored to speak to Dana Hunter, who I met through social media on Facebook, actually. And he's got quite the story. And I'm going to start off right with the biggest question there is, because you were interviewed, and I just, you know, how do you get on the Wine Advocate, and how do you go from becoming a security guard to a wine educator?
Luck, mostly luck. I guess just to kind of tell the story, I was working as a security guard and basically went to pick up my check one day and ran into the tasting room manager, who was kind of having a meltdown because no one showed up to work the tasting room. And literally because I had keys to the tasting room and I was a warm body, I was asked to go stand in the tasting room for 15 minutes, which turned out to be 4.5 hours, which lucky for me turned out to be 4.5 hours, because at the end of the day, they said I'd had a pretty good day there and best day they'd had in 5 years. So they offered me a job.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. And where are you originally from? California?
Yes, California, born and raised. I'm originally from the Central Valley of California, a small little town that no one's ever heard of called Patterson. It's about 30 minutes south of Sacramento, so literally the middle of the state.
Okay, so we actually, our winery is in Paso Robles. We're originally from New Jersey, and there's a Patterson not too far from me here. We now live in Fresno. When I'm not in New Jersey, I'm in Fresno. So I don't think you were that far from there, right?
We're 2 hours north of Fresno. I've been to Fresno many, many times. Just for the record, the Patterson in New Jersey has one T. We have two T's in Patterson, California. I know this because a man from New Jersey literally bet me $100 that Patterson, California did not exist.
It's a pretty stupid bet. You're going to
I think so. I think so. Seeing that I was born and raised there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie. I'm sorry for anybody who's from Patterson, New Jersey, who's listening to this, but I don't think Patterson, New Jersey is actually known as the most intelligent city going around. But yeah, that was a pretty dumb bet. But I asked that because I have to honestly say, as an East Coaster, what pops in my head is our kind of rush personalities, and that Seinfeld episode when he is asked to be a doorman and the guy goes off and has a drink and so he like leaves the facility. That's what I would have done. I was like, all right, I'm out of here. But it sounds like it's a good thing you stuck it out there.
Yeah, I mean, to me it was interesting. So my background previous to that, like, I was a theater major, so to me it was literally just improv. Like, I could do anything for half an hour to convince people I knew what I was talking about. So to me it was just like a real life version of, you know, of acting and of just being in the moment and being able to have a conversation. Plus, I like to talk to people. So I didn't really know anything about wine. And by didn't really, I mean, I'd never drank wine before and didn't know anything. But I knew how to have a conversation. So that's what I focused on, was just having a conversation with people and actually listening to what they said and what they thought about the wines that they were tasting. I wasn't even wise enough at the time to taste the wine myself. I didn't know if that was good or bad, and erred on the side of maybe I shouldn't drink on the job, because generally speaking, that's a policy for most places. So I just had a conversation with people and listened to what they thought about the wines.
Well, you know, I have to say that when we go into a tasting room, I would really prefer people not to tell me what I'm supposed to be tasting, what I'm supposed to, you know. It's like, I think that if I'm interested in what I should be, I would ask. But like when people taste our wine, I never tell them what my tasting notes are because my palate is completely different than your palate. You know, if they ask me my, you know, my thoughts on a tasting, I'll give it to them. But I like the way you went. Just let them taste it and let them have their own time. So.
And I think that's kind of, I mean, that's my philosophy was then, is now, is that wine is such a personal thing. Everyone's palate is different. So I can give you like suggestions on taste profiles, but I'm not going to tell you this is, you know, black cherry or this is definitely rhubarb, because you may not A, be familiar with those, or B, be picking those notes up.
Right.
So I just tell people kind of, hey, what do you taste? Tell me what you think. I'll describe the varietal very generally and kind of my thoughts on how this wine feels in the mouth, but not really specific flavor profiles, because that is such a personal thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I've got to extend the question a little bit further. So how did you get interviewed on Wine Advocate? I mean, that's like impressive, you know, like how did you get that biography done?
By accident. Most of the stuff that happens in my life that's good is by accident. The bad stuff is my fault. The good stuff's usually an accident. It was through social media, actually. The great author RX Drexel actually reached out to me via Instagram and just wrote me a message one day saying that she liked my feed. She liked the pictures that I posted. And she asked if I, you know, would be interested in possibly doing an interview. And I said yes, but didn't really think about it again until, 2 months later, when she kind of went into, hey, this date, this time, this place, like, then it became real. And honestly, even during the interview process, I told my girlfriend this, I don't really remember what I said. She made me sound like a more adult version of myself. She's a phenomenal writer. Like, I just remember talking for 20 or 30 minutes, and then I get a note saying, hey, the article is going live tomorrow. It went live and I read it and I was like, oh man, that sounds really good. Like, I actually might be kind of an adult now.
I guess at some point we all have to somewhat become an adult, but you know, wine keeps us young. Wine keeps us young.
Exactly.
So I'm guessing that since you're at work right now, you don't have a glass in hand, do you?
I don't have a glass in hand, but that can be rectified very, very shortly. It's not something that can't be rectified. I just didn't have one at the moment.
It's always good to have it right on hand where you can grab it in a quick moment.
My life goal is to never be more than 10 feet away from wine, generally speaking, so I'm always in the area.
Oh, all right. So if you don't want to be 10 feet away from wine, if you could only, and this is a horrible, horrible question, I know, but if you could only choose one grape varietal to be by your side, what would it be?
It wasn't hard at all. Cab Franc.
Oh!
By far my favorite.
Oh my God. And people listening, I didn't even pay him to say that. Founder of Cab Franc Day, we produce award-winning Cab Franc. I didn't even pay him to say that. That is a beautiful answer.
Read the article by RX Drexel. I can say that there too. So Cab Franc is by far my favorite rye.
That is a beautiful, beautiful answer. That is definitely our passion. That is what we strive to get everybody to know Cab Franc. You know?
Yes.
That is a beautiful answer. Yay! So I did a little background on you. Mm-hmm. And so I guess a little stalkerish for a little bit to find out a bit about you. And you had actually mentioned it already that you majored in theater. So yes. Where did you go to college, and what were your goals and aspirations? Were you planning on being Broadway, movies, just what were you?
So I went to college at two different places. Initially after high school, I went to Dominican University in San Rafael on a basketball scholarship.
Oh.
But long story short, basketball was no longer an option physically. So I went home for a year and then transferred to Cal State LA, which is where I did theater. Okay. And honestly, the only thing I was thinking was that I was really kind of missing my group of friends from high school. All of them went to Southern California for school, and I was the one that kind of stayed up here. And then after being injured and being kind of home for a year, I was like, I'm just going to go somewhere south and be closer to my friend circle. Because I had small town, had the same friends literally since third grade. So I didn't have any big plans or aspirations. My theater teacher in high school thought that I was a pretty decent actor and recommended that I look into theater in that year that I was home. And he kind of made all the connections and talked to someone that he knew at Cal State LA. They were bugging me about coming down and checking it out, seeing the campus, seeing the program. And so I just decided, well, if I'm going to go to college in LA, I really, really want to totally not have to do schoolwork. So I'm going to do something that's not a subject that I, like, take a test for. Because, again, I'm an overgrown child, and that's how I think, is that I just want to do the least amount of work possible and do the coolest stuff possible.
Well, that's pretty good. Unlike me, who did biology, I had my undergrad. We weren't that far apart. I went to Whittier. Although I think you're quite a bit younger than I am, but I went to Whittier, so I wasn't that far from you.
No.
Biology was, that wasn't, I mean, I love biology. I love microbiology. I actually did marine biology was what I was going for. But that's a lot of tests and a lot of studying. And but comes in handy now making wine,
Well, I mean, there's the chemistry aspect of it, so it's not too far off.
Right. And my husband is a food scientist. He's a food chemist. So, okay. Together we've got both ends of the, both ends of making wine going pretty good.
Absolutely. As I tell my girlfriend, who is an accountant, there's no way possible that, like, I could do numbers and, like, important things, because I just don't have the attention span to look at something for that long to figure it out. I'm an ideas guy. I like to talk, mostly because I like to hear myself talk, but also because I like to hear other people talk. Any subject in school that was group project orientated or get up and do stuff, I always gravitated towards that. And again, because I'm a child, I decided to do that in college too.
There you go. So I think we have very similar personalities. So what position did you play in basketball?
Well, I was 6'1" in eighth grade. So I was rather tall. Now I am 6'3", so I stopped growing. So I went in high school from center all the way down to playing shooting guard in college.
Okay. All right. I think we have similar personalities. I enjoy being in the spotlight. I'm not going to lie. I'm a Sagittarius, and I don't know if you believe in that, not believe in that, but that personality fits me perfectly. I was the shooting guard. I'll be a point guard. I take it down the center of the court. For softball, I was center field, and then I moved over to left field and loved left field. I got to dive to the foul lines, much more exposure on left field. Everybody thinks center field is the best, but left field is better. The spotlight's pretty good. But although I never really got into acting, I never did that. But Spotlight is fun.
Because being hurt in college for basketball, I couldn't do that anymore. But having the reaction of an audience to me was the same. It was the exact same experience. So that's kind of why I did theater, because to me it was a good replacement.
Yeah, I get it. All right, so moving on, so now you are in the wine field, but you didn't really have a background in wine. So when this whole, asking you to move into this wine field, what was the first wine you had that you were like, wow, this is pretty darn damn good wine?
So I don't remember the first wine that I had that was good, because I kind of think like all wine is good to a point. But the first thing that really kind of made me stop and think was I had a Pinot Noir from the Sonoma Coast.
Oh.
This is maybe 8 months into working in wine. And again, my frame of reference, I have to let people know, like, I was seriously not a wine person. I still am avid Coors Light drinker, and that was my drinking. So I didn't know that there was like wine outside of Lodi at first. So I get this Sonoma Pinot, and it's a completely different thing than the Pinots in Lodi. Now,
just
now
a wee bit, just a wee bit,
and all the different like really cool, geeky, nerdy like wine stuff that goes with that. But at the time, I didn't. All I knew was I didn't like Pinot, and this is a Pinot that was different than every other Pinot that I had had. So I was like, well, why? And the way my mind works, I just have to kind of figure things like that out. So that was the moment where I had the kind of aha, or like, huh. So this is a specific thing to a specific place. There are ties and kind of flavor profiles that are going to be dominant here that aren't necessarily the same somewhere else, but that somewhere else may have something else that it imparts into a wine. And I think that was the moment that hooked me, because it was like, this is a never ending quest for knowing why. And I just have to know why things are.
Now, I was having a conversation with a gentleman this weekend about how certain regions grow grapes that, generally speaking, they really shouldn't be. Like, their region is not really designed. The terroir is not made for that. The climate's not made for that. And then the people who are drinking that wine from that region end up saying, I don't like X wine. I don't like Pinot Noir. I don't like Chardonnay. I don't like Cab Franc. I don't like whatever it is, because all they're getting is that region's version of that, you know, and that expression of that, and that it's really hard and detrimental to a grape varietal, because, you know, you take any grape and you put it in a different terroir, you put it in a different climate, it's going to have a different expression. And people, you know, what's really, in someone's opinion, bad in one region might be their favorite grape varietal if they could taste it in a different region.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what you're describing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the moment where kind of I knew that, like, this is going to be, irregardless of my work life, it was just going to be something that I personally enjoyed forever. Because you can never drink everything, right? So I just knew that I had a personal like journey of drinking that was going to be interesting, and I could like discover and find out different things via wine from now until forever. But I confront lines of working in a tasting room, confront that situation that you're describing like every single day. And my best example to explain to people. So I've been in the wine industry 7 years now, but it's about 3.5 of that has been Napa and Sonoma. So those are the big tourist, destinations for wine in the state. So I see a vast number more people here. And I always explain to them, Napa Valley is phenomenal at making wine. And so is Sonoma. But the thing you have to realize is they make different style wines and excel in different varietals. So there's not really a Napa versus Sonoma in the sense of growing. That's more, the marketing and all of that makes this kind of a silly little rivalry. But outside of the Carneros region, you are very rarely going to find a Pinot Noir in Napa. It's just too hot here.
Right.
So I always like to tell people, like, hey, the rest of your day, go and look for a Pinot Noir from Napa that is not from the Carneros region, which is the coolest region here in the coolest AVA here in Napa. And I say, when you don't find one, you will understand what I mean when I say it's all about terroir. Because it's just the location. It's just the climate. It's just those influences that some grapes do well in and some grapes don't do as well in. Or you might have a grape that, like Cabernet Sauvignon, it's great in Napa. It's also great in Sonoma, but they taste different. There's a different expression. It's cooler in Sonoma, so it's a more, feminine, kind of softer, more elegant, complex thing, where Napa you get these big, robust flavors. And depending on who you're talking to, people might prefer one side or the other side stylistically. Doesn't mean that the other side isn't good. It just means that that's their taste.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I say over and over again is just because you try one, don't give up, go and try different regions because you never, exploring is half the fun, but you're going to find that you're going to like certain things that you didn't think you liked because you were so pigeonholed into a certain area.
Absolutely.
So you brought it up again. I was going to ask anyway, but you brought it up. So Coors Light, really? Coors Light, no craft beer. Like, I mean, I think there was a research study done, and I should know who did it, whatever. But they did a research study that winemakers, do drink beer when they're not drinking the wine because, we need the break from the wine. And most winemakers drink IPA, and both my husband and I love IPA. But we are craft beer maniacs. We'll go on vacation and we'll have our apps out to find where we can drink craft beer. So just Coors Light, or do you expand out into exploring craft beers also?
Pretty much just Coors Light. And I'll explain why. Previous to wine, my friends and I were volume drinkers.
Okay. Then that explains Coors Light.
Yeah, like I don't know if it's safe for the kids to hear this, but we used to play this game called the 30 pack challenge, where it was who could finish 30 beers in an hour without going to the bathroom. So you can't do that for craft beer. It's just what we did because we drank a lot over a long period of time. Craft beers are great when you're having one or two, or when you're having with a meal.
Right.
But when you're outside in 100-degree heat, Patterson, we get 115 about 10 times a year. You just want something easy drinking and cold, and Coors Light fits both of those beautifully.
That is true. So here in Jersey, when I was probably not really legal, but had means of getting into places. Sorry, Mom. We used to go to this place in Nyack, New York, that was Penny Till You Pig. And you would go in and every beer was one penny. You got bottles of beer and it was a penny until somebody went to the bathroom for the first time. And then once somebody went to the bathroom for the first time, that was it. The beers went up to the normal prices. And you weren't, if you left, you had to stay out. Nobody, like, they closed the doors. You had to come in at a certain time or whatever. And then if you left, you had to stay out because you could have, I guess, gone to the bathroom outside and come back in. But they stopped that because there was a bit, again, with the East Coasters, there was a bit of violence when people were trying to get into the bathroom to prevent them from going, to keep the beer at a penny. But I do agree, that was a Coors Light night. That's all you drank at that point.
And Coors Light is better than Bud Light, period. So
I agree with you.
All my friends drink Bud Light, but Coors Light tastes doesn't. So, I mean, it was very, very simple to
me. I agree with you. Although, if I'm drinking that type of beer today, I actually do Miller Lite. I do Miller Lite over Coors Light. But
I mean, for me personally, I might as well do the High Life because it's the champagne beer.
That's bad. That's bad beer. I'm sorry. That I cannot do. I don't care. I cannot do that. But all right, you got a reason for Coors Light. That's good. That's good. So as I was asking Dana his next question, a very freak storm came through Napa, and there was lightning and thunder, and apparently lightning must have struck somewhere nearby because Dana lost the Wi-Fi. So the live stream event went dead. And I talked to myself for a bit on the live stream until I realized he was not coming back. And luckily, I had a backup plan where Dana could call in to finish up the interview. So enjoy. So you had a lightning storm, huh?
Yes. If you're here in Napa, you know what's going on. But if you're not, it was sunny and, 92 minutes ago, and then randomly clouds, dark ominous clouds, and the Wi-Fi and power went off in our building.
Holy cow, that's a rather sudden storm. Wow, strange weather. Mother Nature is not very happy with us.
She does not appear to be very happy at all. No.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so let's try to get back. I'm going to, I had asked you, but I don't know if you heard it or not. I had asked you, what exactly does a lead wine educator job entail?
So essentially the term wine educator is kind of my preferred term for people that do what I do, people that work in tasting rooms. I think our job is to educate our customers about not only our wines, but wine in general, really. And so I just prefer the term wine educator over bartender or, any of the other wine steward, any of the other names for the position, because I take my job and my role as educating the public seriously. And then the lead wine educator just means, you're the manager if there's no manager. So people are complaining and the manager is busy. You're the one that gets to figure out how to adjudicate these situations and problems in a way that's, fair and good for your customer. But also you can't give the store away, as they say.
Right. And that's interesting. I find it very difficult. I can honestly say I've never been in a tasting room that I've gotten upset in. There was like nothing that, could happen in a tasting room that would make me so upset that I need to complain in a tasting room. Do you have any stories, a story of like the worst customer on the face of the earth?
Well, first of all, I agree with you in that I have never been so angry during a tasting that I felt I needed to complain or, voice a problem. But, not everyone is that way. So it is what it is on that front. The only type of customer that isn't the most fun and interesting to serve, I think, and this is an overgeneralization and it doesn't, you know, apply to every situation, but I have found that extremely young, very new to wine and new to drinking period, you know, large bachelorette parties can sometimes be difficult.
Well, they're on a different mission. They're not really there to taste wine. They're there to drink and get drunk. So yeah, I get that. I get that.
I totally understand and respect that. And I don't have a problem with it, except for to me when it then affects other guests' experience. That's when kind of, for me, it's a situation where you have to kind of know time and place. Like, hey, this isn't a bar necessarily. You know, you guys are having a great time, and that's great. But there are other people here that we are simultaneously trying to host and trying to, you know, make sure they have a good time as well. And not everyone is looking for the same experience. And that's why I think wineries that offer and provide a bunch of different types of experiences are the most successful at this. But there are other people. So, you know, I know everyone's super excited about Julie's impending nuptials, but I don't think the customers in the other room are as excited about Julie's nuptials as maybe you are.
Very, very valid point. Yes, yes. And I have been in tasting rooms where Julie's crew have been, and yeah, I agree with you. Yes, yes. all right, so in my little stalking period of you, it seems that you are more interested in domestic wine than into, you know, European, into the old world. And as much as I shouldn't say this, that is definitely Mike and myself. We, you know, people talk about all these old world wines and I'm like, yeah, you know, give me an Oregon Pinot, give me that. What's your thoughts on old world versus new world? You know, and what you prefer to.
Like, my philosophy is I will drink anything because of the educational opportunity and being able to kind of connect the dots personally for myself. I'm not opposed to drinking old world wines. I kind of consciously did make a decision not to promote the fact that I, you know, drink old world wines or have drank old world wines. Because to me, it was my social media, my Instagram was literally just documenting everything I drank so that I could remember when someone asked me, have you tried this? That I could look back and see, yes, I have tried that. Because A, my memory is terrible, and B, that's what it started as. And to be honest, when I was in Livermore and in Lodi at the beginning of my wine career, the access to great old world wines wasn't the same as it is now that I'm in Napa. Yeah. And my paycheck wasn't the same as it is now that I'm in Napa. So it was just, I knew about them. I knew of them. I would from time to time, you know, splurge and get one or have one. But for the most part, I was trying to drink things that were local to my area, first off, and things that customers actually would ask me about. So what is the difference between, you know, a Napa cab and a cab from Paso, right, or Santa Barbara Pinot and Sonoma Pinot, or Lodi Zin, Valley Zin? So I just focused on what customers asked me. And I wanted to be able to have a way to come up with an answer that was, you know, informed and educated and, you know, knowledgeable.
And we're starting to explore out into Old World, but my palate really is New World. I can't, so I'm not opposed to drinking Old World. You know, if somebody wants to pour me a glass of Old World, I'll be more than happy to enjoy it. But again, it's easier for me, it's easier for me to grab a bottle from Paso Robles than it is, and it's easier for me to grab a bottle from Paso Robles than it is for me to grab it from Napa, so you drink where you're from. You are right. You are right.
And as my girlfriend says, so we have this ongoing debate, my girlfriend and I, because she loves literally everything, and I am probably like the most picky person that anyone's ever met in their life, because like I like what I like and I don't like anything else until I'm proven otherwise, but it can't be someone else who suggests it, because then I just don't like it on principle. But like Old World wines, I didn't come to them until later in my drinking. So like you, like my palate is just more New World kind of focused, because those are the wines that I drink in my formative years of knowing wine. And yes, I can appreciate a great, Bordeaux wine today. 5 years ago, I couldn't, so I didn't drink them.
Right. And it's all about exploration. It's all about learning something new. So I also read that your long-term goal is to own a winery. So what is your overall goal? Like, do you want to do, so Mike and I, we own a winery, but we source our fruit and we will never, ever, ever own a vineyard. I do not want to farm. What's your overall goal? Do you want to do it all dirt to bottle?
Yeah, I want to do it all. I want to know how to do it all. I was fortunate enough to intern with our winemaker when I was at Darcy Kent during One Harvest, and kind of got to help and see the whole winemaking process kind of up close and personal and participate in it. I know for a fact that I do not have winemaking like skills and capability as far as to be able to have as many things in their heads at one time as they have. There was a tremendous amount of math and science that I was wholly unprepared to have to go through and know.
Yes.
And I fully appreciate good winemakers, and I would not attempt to do what they do, because I know that's not my strong suit. I would like to own vineyards. That's kind of my plan, is to own some vineyards and sell some fruit to kind of start up the capital for my winery. My overall kind of pie in the sky dream would be to have a winery that produced, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Cabernet, and Merlot, but do it from the big California region. So go through and have a Lodi, a Livermore, a Sonoma, a Napa, a Paso Robles, a Santa Barbara, of all of those varietals, and to be able to show people through taste the differences in, what grows well where and why, and why, coastal Pinots are so much better than Pinots that are inland, just because of temperature and how you get a cab from a warm climate, and that's going to be different than a cab from a cool climate, and really have an instructional kind of tasting experience and educational experience, but making good wines from all of these wonderful places in California.
That would be really, really cool to go into a tasting room that did that. There's lots of wineries that source their fruit from different regions, but it's not focused on an educational aspect of it. They're just getting their fruit from different locations. But that would be a cool niche for you to start, is like make kick-ass wine and learn about the regions at the same time, as you came in for a wine tasting. You know, there's a couple wineries I know, like McPhail in Sebastopol. They have the wall of dirt, you know, so they talk about the different dirts. And Ancient Peaks does the same. You know, they have their rocks in their thing, but it's more like, you know, background. You've got to ask them about it versus it being in the forefront, you know, of it. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, like my experience is literally just informed by my experience. So I've had customers ask these questions, and yes, I know the answer, but it's, I would say it's different for me to tell you something and for you to taste something. So if I put two cabs side by side and say, taste it, you do know more than you think you do, you know, John Q customer. If I say it has a, you know, a lush, smooth finish, you might not be familiar with those wine terms, but when you taste it, you can taste the difference between that and something that is, you know, a little bit drier, a little bit more tannic. You just don't know the words.
Right.
So my teach you the words. So I want to be a winery that teaches you how to buy wine at your grocery store, knowing where to look and what regions to kind of focus on for your specific palate, because you're not going to like every Pinot that I have or every Merlot that I have or every Cab that I have. But once we figure out what you do like, then boom, I can tell you why. And now you just look for these sorts of things in your everyday life when you're looking at different wines, and you'll be a more educated consumer and you will buy wines that you like more often.
I like it. I would visit your winery, no problem. I like that concept, and I like your attitude of people know more than they think they know. People are so nervous, you know, when they taste with somebody who's in the wine industry. You know, it's like you pour them a glass of wine and they're like, oh, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I don't know. I'm like, well, do you like it or do you not like it? Like, that's all that really matters, you know? And it would be awesome, you know, for them to be able to learn that they do know more than they think they do. And, you know, you don't need to know all of the terms to enjoy wine.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think part of people knowing more than they think, but being nervous about it or being scared about it, has been the industry's kind of fault in a way, perpetuating this idea that, oh, it's too complicated for you to understand.
Yeah.
Because wine isn't that complicated when you really break it down. Do you like the way this tastes or not? If you do, well, let's figure out why. You don't, okay, well, let's figure out why and stay away from that. And if you do that enough times, you're going to eventually understand your palate better.
Right. And nobody's palate is your palate. Nobody can tell you what you like and what you don't like.
But they do pay me a lot of money to tell you stuff, so we still need me too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my next question is, what is your favorite and least favorite aspect of being in the wine industry? And I'm gonna go out on a limb. I think that your favorite is the education aspect. I think you enjoy being in front of the people and talking to them, but I may be wrong.
You're not. That's what I enjoy. Like, I love talking. I love, as my girlfriend says, I love a captivated audience. They are there to experience wine, and only I can pour it for them, so I get to talk, and that's cool too. I'm a fan of that. But I genuinely like learning about wine, and I learn about wine through every interaction with the customer, because, you know, some of them have been drinking longer than I have. Some of them haven't. Some of them know more than I do. Some of them don't. But that constant kind of flow and exchange of information to me is the best part of what I do. The least fun part of what I do is just driving to work. I would like to just be at work and then be at home. I don't really like I like driving. I don't like going places, really. I'm super lazy. So I don't like the 30 minutes it takes me from my house. Eliminate that and, like, teleport me. That would be better, I think.
I get it. My commute is 15 minutes, and I would like it to be 5, you know. I get it. But that's when I listen to other podcasts, so that's the only time I...
That's literally what I do on the way to work, too. Let me state for the record, I live in Sonoma. I am commuting to Napa. Okay. My commute is phenomenal. It's beautiful. It's pretty. I understand all of those things and appreciate them. I just don't like doing stuff. I'm lazy. It's fine. I'm okay with it. I've made peace with it.
So when we first contacted each other, you were working in one place, but now you are in a whole new job. So fill us in. Where are you at? What you doing?
I was fortunate enough to accept the position at Ashes and Diamonds in Napa. It was a really cool, unique opportunity that I kind of had to jump on. The philosophy of Ashes and Diamonds is more kind of an educational, laid back, I say less like used car salesman type deal, where they want people to be educated about wine. My job is to educate you. It doesn't really matter. I mean, it does, but I am not incentivized to make a monthly sales goal. I am incentivized to have good interactions with customers. And to me, that's amazing.
That is amazing. And what are they? I'm going to be honest. I am not familiar with that brand. So tell us about the brand.
That's okay. Just launching our inaugural releases. So
oh,
you couldn't be familiar with it unless you were here.
Oh.
We make a few different wines. So we do a rosé of Cab Franc.
Oh my God.
Yeah, geek out about that. We call it our Blanc, which is a 50% Sauv Blanc, 50% Semillon blend. We do a Cab Franc from our estate property. And then we have two Cab Franc Merlot blends from our estate property. And then we have two single vineyard cabs, one from Oakville and one from Rutherford here in Napa.
Oh, okay. Well, I think it is kind of difficult to be in Napa and not make a cab. that might be blasphemy in Napa.
So I think they shoot you.
Yeah, in front of the firing squad. Rutherford, ooh, got some dust going on. That's good.
Does, but I'll tell you the most interesting thing about the Rutherford cab in particular and Ashes and Diamonds in general. The Rutherford cab is 12.6% alcohol.
Not that you can see me, but I think I just fell off of my chair. Really?
So we are making wine in the style of Napa Valley in the 60s and 70s.
Wow.
That's kind of the hook for Ashes and Diamonds, is that they're not very big, huge, fruit-forward wines. Soft, elegant, some would say even more European style, but more what Napa used to be, actually.
Wow. That's very, you know what, and... I mean, well, coming from Paso, where, you know, you don't get under 14, that's impressive.
So it's very similar.
Yes. Well, I'm going to go up here. So with all of that Cab Franc, I am going to harass the living daylights out of you to have them participate in this year's Cab Franc Day. So
harassment accepted. And duly noted, and I will work on that.
And I promote the living daylights out of that. I started that holiday. It's near and dear to my heart. It's December 4th. in honor of Cardinal Richelieu's anniversary of his death. So it's December 4th. But oh yeah, I am harassing the living. You are not getting rid of me now. You, I'm going to make sure you guys participate. Have a party at your, at the tasting room, something to participate. I have one last question before we get to playing our game. Okay. Our tagline, one of our taglines is pursue your passion. And I mean, it's so obvious that you have a passion. So if you were to give advice to someone who's entering the wine industry, or if you prefer to give advice to a younger version of yourself, what would that advice be?
I think the most important thing for someone on this side of the wine industry, right, in the tasting room side, because I think it would be different, obviously, if you're in a restaurant or if you're wholesale, but for the tasting room, don't be afraid to learn. You don't always have the answer. Coming from someone who literally tells everyone, if we start from the premise that I'm always right, our conversations will go a lot smoother. That was something I had to kind of really, really learn, that I don't have all of the answers all the time. And it's okay to learn from any kind of source or any means.
That is true. I way back in high school, I had a science teacher who said there's two types of knowledge: knowledge you need to know, and knowledge that it's okay to go look up. And that is true. I agree with you. All right, so you ready to play a game?
Sure.
All right. So one of my favorite shows on TV that is like on every single minute of the day is Friends. And in one of the episodes, Joey is trying to go cross country and he's deciding north or south. And Phoebe plays a game of opposites. And the whole idea is that you just state whatever you know, whatever the answer, whatever pops first into whatever your mind is. Okay. So I'm going to start off to kind of get you into the groove with non-wine things. But then we're going to get into some wine questions. All right. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. So night or day?
Night.
Sunset or sunrise?
Sunset.
Black or white?
Black.
Walk or run?
Walk, I don't run.
Food or drink?
Drink.
Old world, new world?
New world.
Sweet or dry?
Dry.
Bubbles or still?
Still.
Oak or stainless?
Oh.
Drink now or drink later?
Now. I could die tomorrow.
I like your thinking. Absolutely. Blend or varietal?
Varietal.
Vintage or non-vintage?
Vintage.
Cork or screw cap?
Cork.
All right. This one really fits it for you guys. Napa or Sonoma?
Napa wine, Sonoma people.
Oh, you know what? I do love Sonoma people. I really do. Commercial or indigenous?
Indigenous.
Yeah, all right. Warm climate or cool climate?
Warm climate.
Bordeaux or Rhone?
Bordeaux.
All right. All right. Yay. Well, thank you very, very much, Dana, for joining me and answering, you know, telling us your story through our technology glitches, the dang lightning storm, and showing perseverance to come on back.
Thank you for having me. It was awesome. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. And I am not joking. You don't really know me, but I'm not lying. You are not getting rid of me for Cap Franc Day. I will shoot you the email with the letter with all the information so that you guys can decide if you want to join or not. All right.
Definitely, I will definitely bother them to join. So
all right. It really is free
I'm all about
advertisement
joining.
for them, so it's good.
Yeah.
I wish you all the best in your new job and teaching all those peoples all of the education of wine, and I hope you don't get too many bridal or bachelor parties coming on in there in the near future.
Well, that's you can only hope. But my question is,
Yes.
so when are you sending me your Cab Franc and I'm sending you ours? Like that's you never got that taken care of.
Oh, that we can do that without a problem. I will, you know what, I'll shoot you some information in an email with it right now. We're at we are finally dropping, like I said, we live in Fresno, but we are finally dropping under 100 degrees. So we're not shipping anything in the right away. But it is supposed to drop to 80 next week, which is like you know, put on the ski coats for that. So I don't exactly know what happened on that second one. I think we had another lightning strike in Napa and I lost him again. But I would like to thank Dana for joining me. I had a blast talking to him, and I am looking forward to getting out to Napa and visiting Ashes and Diamonds and meeting Dana in person. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions of what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media or at dracenawines@gmail.com. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting program you use. To easily subscribe at iTunes, please go to bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/D for Dracena and capital P for podcast. We would greatly appreciate you leaving a review on your favorite system. It helps others to find us. Let's get social. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, YouTube, Google Plus, and Periscope at Dracena Wines. And I am on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Check out our award-winning wine at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!